Hey everybody, this is our fifth session of the Wire Workshop, and we are just going to start in, I guess. Here is our agenda for tonight. We're going to start off with our roundtable of questions. We'll dive into the presentation, which tonight is about self-esteem. And of course, you know, we always have a good discussion as we go through the presentation. Then we'll review the homework and close. Anyone want any deviation from that?
No.
No. Okay. Well then, let's start with a question. Who would like to start answering the question, how was your week?
How was my week? It was pretty good. I still have a lot of tears, but they don't come as, they don't flow as freely. It's more like I have to dig them out. You know what I'm saying?
That's progress.
Yeah, it's they don't come spontaneous. It's more like I have to dig for them a little bit. Well, tomorrow is my ex's birthday, and so you know, I kind of been. I'm not gonna acknowledge it at all. I'm not gonna say anything or do anything. She had a party last night at her house. I know because I picked up one of the kids to go to tutoring, and of course I knew all the cars in the driveway. And you know, I started to feel kind of left out, and then I thought, no, I don't. I'm not gonna feel that way. You know, I'm gonna let that go. But you know, it's on my mind. I'm on a dating site called Compatible Partners. It's the gay and lesbian group that's connected with eHarmony.
Yeah.
And I've been texting this woman who lives about 45 minutes to an hour away from me. And I kind of said to myself I wasn't going to, you know, go out with anybody or meet anybody new until I was finished with this workshop, you know, because I wanted to put all my focus on this. But I think we're going to go out and just have supper together one night, maybe next week. And I told her, I mean, I didn't tell her I was doing this group, but I told her that, you know, I'd be happy just to meet, you know, meet and eat supper together. But I wasn't interested in moving on very quickly, you know, because I want to put my focus here. I think that's the right decision.
Well, how nice that.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to treat yourself to companionship.
Yeah, that's exactly what I. Yes, that's what I'm. That's what I want to do, but that's all.
Yeah. Well, and something else that you said that I really want to commend you for is the choice you made about how you were going to interpret the cars in the driveway. Because that's not always so easy.
Oh, no, it wasn't at first. I was real hurt, you know.
Yeah.
And then I thought, why would I want to be there anyway, you know? That would be so and terribly awkward, you know.
So it really kind of sounds like it was a good week from my standpoint.
Yeah, it was. It was a good week. I'm still dealing with the grief. I did write my hello letter, and that was energizing to do that.
Yeah.
Did you write yours, Hugo?
Yes, mine too. I really found it that after I did that, you know, I realized that there's such a lot of things that I still want to do, you know, why why keep myself up with all this, how can I say, baggage, you know, that sort of thing. That's the way I felt after I did that. And you realize you still have a lot to look out and to live for, eh? There are actually a lot of things that, like you say, you feel energized, that you actually can look forward to, you know, getting up in the morning and getting those things done you know.
And that there's still meaning in life. There's still meaning.
There's meaningful. Yes, there's a lot of, you know, life is meaningful. So, we can still have a good life.
Mm-hmm.
Today is the first day of the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thrilled you guys had such a good experience with writing that hello letter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's it was a very good exercise, I think.
Oh, God. And now you know why I usually prescribe it to be written immediately following the goodbye letter.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So you don't get stuck in the goodbye.
Yeah, I think that was maybe why the previous week was a bit bad for me. Because obviously that the goodbye one, it opened up, I'm not saying it opened up wounds, but, you know, it scratched over a few things that, you know. So you feel those things in your gut as you talk about them or as you write them down, and once you've done that, subconsciously you just go like back into mourning again, that sort of thing, you know? But that was good because it, like I said, it just makes sure that you know, you sort of clean the wounds. It's never a nice thing to clean out the wound, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But
it's
a necessary thing to do. It's always there's always hurt involved when you clean out the wound. But what do they say? Doctors that with careful hands don't clean out wounds properly. You know, that sort of thing. So you can't be too careful when you. You have to address everything when you go out through that goodbye letter. I feel good about that, and like this week, maybe if I can give feedback on this, I also had a good week after I wrote my hello letter, and when I read through the anger thing, I realized some things that I did in the past, you know, that I think contributed to our issues we had in our marriage, because, you know, my wife, she grew up with a father and a mother. They were screaming in the house, hey? They were screaming at each other, and their marriage didn't last. It just, you know, when she was like in high school, they broke up, they divorced. And her father was a real, I wouldn't say a pig, but he, you know, he like verbally abused her mother. So I think that's where she learned a lot of her, if I can call it, tricks. Because from the book, I say that, you know, children pick up from you how to handle anger. And I think, she expressed herself in the same way as her father did when there was conflict and whatever, you know. And at first in my marriage, I was like, you know, you were like struck like a rock. I was like speechless, you know. How could this happen?
Yeah.
My mom and dad never, ever, ever used to do this, you know. They disagreed, and then they, you know, they talked about it, and so I sort of got to a stage where I thought I can't talk to my wife because she screams at me, and if you know, she's always right, that kind of thing. I couldn't have a rational argument, not an argument, but a disagreement with her, you know. And and maybe I should have tried better. I could have, you know, do it in a better way, because the guys there, the one guy says that you should use the I feel like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this when you do that, whatever, and I never did that because I don't know. Maybe I didn't get that message or that example from my mom and dad. But in the end, when she started screaming, I just shut up and I just told her, look, this is not going to work because we can't sort anything out because you just scream and shout. So in the end, it wasn't productive. We couldn't sort out anything at all, you know. So I think that was useful information for me, you know, on how to handle difficult, you know, how to improve on your conflict sort of handling type of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, yes, that's a way I contributed to our breakup, I think. Because I must say, my wife wasn't, it's not the easiest person to live with. And I think her future partners are going to open up a lucky packet there that they haven't. What did I say? A box of chocolates. My life is like a box of chocolates. Are they going to chew into something? Okay. Like I said, I also contributed, so I have to take responsibility for that. Yeah.
No, Hugo, that's one of the most powerful statements anyone can make, especially a dumpy. It's saying, I understand how I contributed to it. Because once you do that, you're no longer the victim of someone else's decision.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't want to be a victim, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be a victim. I want to have control over my life. And like I said, this week after I did the hello letter, I see there are so many things that's worth living for. So, I really want to see my children getting happily married, and I want to teach some of these things to my children, you know, because some of them, like, can really prevent you going to that situation in the first place. But yes, There are so many things I'm looking forward to, like seeing the grandchildren, or you know, that type of thing. I'm going to be an awesome grandpa. Not that I feel like I'm that old, but
oh my God.
A lot of things, yeah. Although, I mean, they don't even have, my second oldest, or my second son, he has a girlfriend, but I mean, he's still at school. None of them have marriage plans yet. Okay. Sorry, I've talked enough. Well, I'm going to give you a job.
You will make an awesome grandpa, Hugo.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah.
So, Roland, what did you think of Chapter 9, reading about anger?
Well, I really identified with so much of it, and it was so confirming that, you know, what I've been feeling, because I feel a lot of anger, and I feel that, you know, what I've been feeling is normal. You know, I'm not a crazy lunatic, you know, that's fallen off the edge or anything. I really liked on page 114 where it talked about anger can be beneficial because it helps you to let go and become emotionally distant from your former partner. You know, I never thought about it that way, but when you're angry, that does help you to move away, to let go. So I like that. I also like on I'm trying to turn my book and hold my phone and everything. Oh, on page 118, the frustration of being out of control. Boy, I really feel that sometimes, because I feel like that my ex had all the control, and I just had to take the hand that was dealt me, you know. And then the dumpies are often still in love, and the people they love are suddenly saying they do not love them anymore. And I felt that the rejection that leads to anger, and then about the future, you know, that now the my future has been taken away. You know, I just really identified with all of that in there. I wrote next to that page, yes. the thing that I know I still need to work on, but on the last page, it said, how are you doing? You know, and it had those 15 statements. And I could only check off one. I checked off number 12, I'm able to admit when I feel angry rather than deny my angry feelings. And the rest of them, I'm really not through yet. I just, I'm getting closer, but honestly at this point in time I can't check the others off as having no anger at all. So that was a little discouraging to me.
Why is that discouraging, Brian?
Well, because I really wish I wasn't angry anymore. But I know that I still am.
Yeah, and I think it's appropriate that you're still angry, because you've still got a lot of ties, a lot of emotional ties to her.
Yeah.
And you know, you have the added complexity of her leaving you for a man.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so that adds a whole nother twist to what you're going through. And so it makes sense that you're angry. And I don't want you to feel, please don't feel, that just because we talk about a topic 1 week that you should be through with it by the time we talk to next week.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead, because you had something important you wanted to say.
Well, I don't like feeling this anger. You know, I want to be able to let it go, but I feel like I can't make myself let it go. It has to work itself out.
It's kind of this interesting dynamic, right? Because, you know, the page 118 where you said yes, everything?
Uh-huh.
How much of that stuff was in your grief letter, your goodbye letter?
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah. And so you're kind of starting to see how these things are, we talk about them discreetly, you know, individually, separately, but they're really kind of tied together.
Uh-huh.
And with Hugo's comment of seeing how he contributed, how his behavior contributed to the difficulties in the marriage,
uh-huh.
he was actually going all the way back to the adaptations we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
I'm talking
uh-huh.
about how his wife learned how to behave like this and how he learned to behave like that. And when they
uh-huh.
got together, it, you know, their adaptations didn't really mesh.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
mm-hmm.
so it's the book is one way, real life is more complicated.
mm-hmm.
So be patient with yourself, please.
Okay.
Be loving of yourself for being willing to go through this process in the first place.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to get over my anger. You know,
well,
I know that one time you said, as life mm-hmm. goes on, you kind of forget who is the dumper and the dumpy, and I, at this point in time, I can't forget that. You know what I'm
saying?
And
that's okay.
Yeah,
and that's okay, because that's where you are right now. Okay?
Yeah.
Appreciate where you are. Think about where you were the very first time you and I spoke.
Right.
Was it anywhere near where you are now?
No, I've moved beyond in some ways.
Mhm. You move way beyond in a lot of ways. I mean, if I only look at what happened this week, right?
Uh-huh.
Think back to when we first had our very first conversation.
Uh-huh.
And then imagine feeling like that when you drove up to pick up one of the girls for her tutoring and seeing all the cars in the driveway.
Uh-huh.
Would you have even been able to drive?
Probably not.
Yeah. And then think about the courageous step you're taking of actually going out to supper with a woman just for companionship. Would you have been able to do that?
Mm-mm.
No. I mean, my recollection of our first conversation was you weren't sure you'd ever even want to date again. You felt so uncomfortable. And now I listen to just what you're choosing to do now. Girl, you've done tons of work. Tons of work. Has a magic wand been waved? No. So
no.
There's still some more work to go. And that's okay.
Yeah. Karen, I just want to come in here. I think one of the most difficult things is that, you know, obviously first there's the grief and then there's the anger. And
mm-hmm.
these things are sort of... how can I say, mesh together, but it seems like the anger thing is more, is like the more, the one that follows on the grief, that sort of thing. For me, it works that way. Now, I'm currently more in the anger phase than in the grief phase. And maybe for me, that's a good thing, because in the book it says that when you go through a divorce, the anger allows you to, you know, to get rid of your partner. My choice of words probably not the best, but it allows you to move on. It enables you to move on. Okay, And so at this stage, I wouldn't say I'm past the grief thing, but I think I'm like 70-80% that sort of thing completed. I still feel sad sometimes and that, but I think the anger thing is more a thing that catches me nowadays, okay? Just after the goodbye letter, I did feel a lot of sadness and grief, yes. And I think that was good. But now, with the anger thing, what I realize is that I need to forgive. I need to be able to forgive. And that in itself is, I think, quite a process. It's not a switch that you just flick and then you know, everything is fine. I think it's a road that you need to walk. And, you know, Verlaine, we are on this road, but obviously we've only started now, so it's not going to happen immediately to that you feel, okay, you know, I'm fine, that my ex-partner is now seeing somebody else, or, you know, so I still, at this stage, I don't feel like getting romantically involved with another person at this stage. Although I don't have a problem, I will go out with someone if there is an opportunity or so. But I'm not looking for that at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's this is simply, in short, my position at this stage. So, but I think the forgiveness thing is important, and the important thing is that that we are willing to forgive, yeah, to start the process. We need to say out loud that I'm willing to forgive, and because that's the thing that starts this whole process. And if we cannot forgive, that's what happens is this anger thing is going to burn us up, you know. We're going to get burned. We burn ourselves with our own anger by doing stupid and whatever things, vindictive things. So, yeah, that's just the way I see it.
There was a very interesting article on Thought Catalog that a woman I met through Twitter shared with me. And it talks a lot about the mixture of anger and forgiveness and kind of the transition you need to make from anger to get to forgiveness. And it's not just forgiveness of your partner, but it's often forgiveness of yourself as well. Would you guys like to have that link to look at and maybe just think about?
I sure would. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes, I'd like that, Karen.
Okay. Because I could tell you about it, but I know I'd butcher it because it wasn't a piece that I wrote. I was very impressed by it.
So you'll send the link to it?
Yes, I will. I will.
Okay.
I'll send it out with the link to the recording and all of that.
Okay.
And the recording. I'm taking a note so I don't forget it for y'all tomorrow.
I once heard a very interesting expression. The guy said, "It's like if you want to have vengeance or whatever, nah, it's like, you know, you're catching fish on a boat and then there's this fish and it breaks your line every time. Now you go and you get a very strong line and you catch the fish. Only thing is, this fish is so big, it drags your boat all over the ocean. But you are so intent on catching the fish that you don't mind where you're going, you know, and you are too angry to cut the line because you don't realize that this thing is taking you to places where, you know, where you don't actually want to be. So it's something like that. So, yeah, sorry.
That's a great visualization of it, and letting something outside of you have control over you. So that is a very, very good picture. It made me laugh too, of a fish taking you around like that. You think of, you know, the cartoons.
Yeah.
Well, so the next question on our list is, how do you usually express your anger? Who would like to tackle that one first?
I prefer to take a walk, to do exercise. That's my preferred option.
So if you're in a discussion with someone and you become angry, you leave and take a walk?
Well, sorry, Karen, I didn't.
Oh, if you're in a discussion with someone.
Yeah.
And you become angry during the discussion, do you excuse yourself and go take a walk?
No, sorry. That doesn't make sense. I express my anger. I show that I'm angry. I will get angry, I will show that I get angry. Sometimes I will, with gestures I'll just say, look, this is ridiculous. I can't understand. Why do you want to do this? Obviously, it happens all the time at work or whatever. But it's, for me, I can handle it with a lot of different people, right? But with my wife or my ex-wife, it's like a cul-de-sac. Well, what's a cul-de-sac? It's a stop street or it's a dead end.
Oh, a cul-de-sac. Yeah.
We
say cul-de-sac.
Cul-de-sac.
We say it very American. not the French. We say it very American.
Yeah. So with people at work, I don't have issues. I can solve the anger or the whatever. I get angry, but I handle it. It's not an issue, you know. We can talk about it, and we once the people realize that I don't have really bad intentions or whatever, we can solve the problem, you know, because we can talk about it. With my wife, it's totally a different ballgame. Like I said, you hit a brick wall. It's a dead end. And it just feels like you cannot win here. Why even try? That sort of thing, you know? I'd like to talk about it. I'd like to talk, you know, with any person that I get involved into an argument or whatever, I like to talk it out. That's my first pride, okay? But obviously you do get the odd person that you cannot, you know, he is hell-bent on his, you know, pushing his agenda. And then how can you convince such a person? He has to bump his head, man. And I found that as well at work as well. You know, you get managers and people like that, and you tell them, look, from a technical perspective, this is my advice. And then they just go and do the opposite. And then later on they find out, look, this is a problem now, you know. And then I told them, on that day I told you that, and I gave you that advice, and why did you not listen? So, it's, some people need to bump their heads. You just cannot convince them, you know. But although you try.
Well, so it's kind of like you're almost saying what pushes your button. You look down there, you know, at the list of questions, it says what behaviors and situations push your button. And
yeah.
It kind of sounds like you're close to articulating that. So if you were to say specifically what behaviors and situations push your buttons, what would they be?
The one where a person comes in and he, she wants to push his decision, and I know that is not the right thing to do. Because of experience and whatever, and then when I will try to convince them, but if they persist with that, then there's no solution for that besides that person going, you know, bump their heads. They need to bump their heads. That's what needs to happen. But
so,
that's one thing that really pushes my button. If somebody comes in and they want to push theirs, they only have their, you know, it's like they have blinkers on. They can't see anything else. They can only see something that they have, it's like a preconceived idea, you know. They want to do that. And that's it. And they don't see all the other options and the benefits and the pitfalls of, you know, they don't see the big picture. If they fail to see that, that's something that really, you know, makes me angry. Yeah.
And it really sounds like, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and then I leave them because I cannot, if I cannot, how can I say, break through into their thought patterns, then there's no other way, you know, there's no other way than I just stop convincing them. I just stop to try, that's it.
So, it sounds like what pushes your buttons is someone who has a fight to have, who wants to fight.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, fight for the sake of fighting, that's... I can fight if I want to, but I don't... fight for the sake of fighting, is that really worth it? I don't know. You know? I can fight if I want to, but I don't want to fight the whole time just for the sake of fighting. That's not me.
Yeah.
There are many more pleasant things to do than fighting.
Thank you for that, Hugo.
But sometimes you have to fight, and you know, if something's worth fighting for, then I will not back down, you know. I won't back down. This is it depends, you know, if the issue is so important to me, I'm not going to what I've seen, especially in our environment, when you have lots of politics involved in our business and whatever. Some of the managers, they'll cut you down if you go against them, you know, that sort of thing. So it's bad politics to go against them. And So what you do is you allow them to make their mistake, and then they realize it, and then they come back to you. Because you know what to do. Because you've had experience. And then they allow you to do what you wanted to do in the first place, you see. So in the end, you get what you want. But it's what do they say? There's the long, short path and the short, long path. If you're going to go up against this guy with and you want to fight him, I think there's going to be, firstly, there's going to be a battle, and guess who's going to lose? You're going to lose because of, you know, seniority, or, you know, the guy's more senior than you. So then you're not going to win that battle. And in the end, he's going to do what he wants to do in any case. So allowing to do what he wants to do, and then the sooner he realizes his mistake, the sooner you can do the right thing. But okay.
So that's the business world.
Yeah.
What about with your sons?
With my sons, I allow them. Obviously we have our differences, and I try to convince them also. Because I give them pocket money now. Then I see, okay, they buy this, you know, all sorts of nonsense and whatever. And I tell them, look, this is your money, but, you know, I wouldn't buy that if I were you. But it's still their own decision. You know, I can't, they have a free will choice, and I have to allow them to exercise that. And I'm their parent, and, you know, when they were small, I had to tell them, okay, you do this, you do that, and whatever. But as they get bigger, they need to be able to make their own decisions, and I can only guide them once they are out of the house, okay? They are like teenagers now. The oldest one is at university. I can't really tell him what to do anymore, you know. He's like his own person now. But I have to keep open the good communication between me and him so that, you know, if he needs a problem, he can come back to me and ask for advice or for help or whatever. So in terms of conflict, if this is my house, so if he comes into my house, he needs to abide by my rules. Otherwise, he can go and live somewhere else and do what he wants there. He cannot do here what he wants. He has to abide by my rules. So, and that's basically it. But, you know, if he's out there somewhere, he can do what he wants. And, so we... me and my children, I never had the issues that I had with my wife, with my children. Never. Never, ever.
Good.
We can talk to each other. We can talk about everything, you know, all kinds of issues. And yes, they still do what they want to do. I give them advice, but they still want to. Sometimes they take my advice, sometimes they don't. And as long as they realize that if you make a decision, you have they are responsible for the consequences of that decision. And that's fine. That's the way you learn. I have very good relations with my children. I'm actually very glad for that. This week, my wife wanted them to go and cycle with her and her boyfriend. There's a, like 100-kilometer cycle race somewhere, and she requested them to go with her on that side with her boyfriend, and then they just sort of said no, didn't say no directly, but you know the body language.
Well, she wanted them to go cycling with her boyfriend.
Go with her and her boyfriend.
Oh, her and her boyfriend. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then they sort of said no, you know, and then I just chuckled, you know, like behind my, you know, behind the door, that sort of thing.
how do your boys relate to the boyfriend, or do they?
Well, they don't like him very much.
Uh-huh.
They don't like him very much because he's like what do they call these things? A narcissist. He likes himself very much. And he's always he's always pushing his agenda, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't like him that much. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they get along with him, but obviously only for their mother's sake. But I think I have quite a good relationship with them. When I ask them to go and do things with me, they don't have a problem, you know. Obviously they have their own friends and things like that. They want to associate a lot with their friends, especially the youngest one. He has to have a lot of friends. He's a very, how can I say, social person, you know, the youngest one.
That sounds like my youngest one, too. Oh, yeah.
He just has to have a lot of friends. And
I allow him to do
that as long as his grades are good, you know. His homework needs to be done, and then he can go wherever for the weekend. But yeah. Sorry, I talked a long time now, Karen.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, don't worry. It's Verlaine's turn next.
Okay.
Verlaine, how do you usually
pressuring? Yeah, you see, that's also why I took custody of my children. I don't want my wife to end up having custody because I don't think that's the best for them, you know.
Yeah.
If I thought my wife would have been better than me, then I would have allowed her to have custody of the children.
Who's got a doggie?
No, it's my dog.
Oh.
No, it's my dog. I have a Rottweiler here, and he's barking at something in the street now.
It's 4 a.m. in the morning. Ooh.
Yeah, probably a cat or something in the street.
So, Verlaine.
Yeah.
How do you usually express your anger?
Well, I cry. Of course, I cry at anything. I cry, and then I cuss.
Yeah.
I really like that in the book, that it said cussing is a good thing to do. My ex does not cuss at all and thinks it's horrible that I cuss. I mean, she just thinks I'm morally, you know, terrible because I cuss. And I was so pleased in the book that said that's an appropriate way to express anger.
I also do that, but maybe not in front of my wife.
Yeah.
Well, guys, afterwards, nah, I do a lot of the cutting, but when I'm alone, you know, that sort of thing.
I have been inappropriate with my anger in the last couple of years. I'm getting much better at not doing that. You know, cussing in front of my kids. And, you know, I've cussed at my ex a couple of times. And, you know, it was rage. You know, I certainly know what divorce rage is. I don't have that rage as much anymore.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well,
I still cuss when I'm by myself.
Yeah. Well, just to kind of lighten the mood a little bit, okay?
Yeah.
My husband loves to drop F-bombs.
Uh-huh.
It's all over the place because he figures it's a multi-purpose word. It expresses happiness and upset. And so he's a great big football fan. And a couple of years ago, his daughter, you know, my stepdaughter was up with her kids. And my hubby was watching the football game, and his team just had a great play. And he dropped the biggest, loudest F-bomb you've ever heard. All in shock, staring at him. And then he got a little bit red and giggled and said, "Oh, I forgot." Didn't even watch this
game. Well, my daughter, my oldest daughter, has special needs, you know, and she has a very bad speech delay. And I frequently will say, "Damn it," you know.
Yeah.
And so she would hear me do this. And one day she got mad at something and she said, "I will not say damn it." We always told her not to say damn it. She says she can't stand. "I will not say damn it. I will not say damn it."
How cute. Oh my gosh. But you know, that's a perfect example of how, you know, the kids learn so much from their parents.
Oh, they do.
You know?
Yeah.
And dealing with anger is one of the things that they learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not very proud with how I've expressed anger a lot. I think I'm getting better.
Well, okay, let me ask you this, Verlaine, because I'm concerned that maybe you're being a little bit hard on yourself. Okay?
Yeah.
It's okay to express your anger. In fact, it's necessary that you express your anger. And just because the way that works for you doesn't work for anybody else, that's okay. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I told the story about my hubby.
Yeah.
Right? Is because it really is a multi-purpose word to him. It's just part of how he expresses himself. And what I found was even more hilarious is, you know, my best friend from junior high and high school is an avid blogger. You know, so he writes a lot. And a few years ago, before I met my husband, he had written a blog exactly about how the F-bomb is the multi-purpose word and can be used to express anything and everything and how much his mother hates it. But he still does it, you know. And at the time, gosh, I guess we were in our 30s when he wrote that. And that's just me. And so, you know, here I go and, you know, a few years later, you know, about 10 years later, marry a man who has the same belief. And I think, okay, at least I'm consistent in who I like to pick as friends. But, you know, it's okay to have things that are idiosyncrasies about you because they make you you.
Yeah.
And if part of
it,
how you express your anger, that's okay.
I was so judged by that all these years, you know.
Yeah.
That wasn't appropriate. That wasn't proper. That wasn't appropriate, you know. I feel that's why I was glad I read it in the book, because it was like, okay, this is an okay way to express anger.
Sure it is. My gosh. When I get really angry, ooh, I'm like a sailor.
Yeah, I am too. And my kids will tell me that I cuss and Mama never cusses, you know. And they remind me, and they'll tell me too that Mom is perfect, you know, and I'm not.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
well,
they
you
will.
Know what?
Because I cuss.
You need to tell them I'm perfectly me.
Yeah.
Because you are.
But she doesn't cry. She hasn't cried in front of them through all this. She hasn't cussed in front of them through all this. Of course, she's the dumper. I'm the dumpee. So that makes a difference.
Yeah, but, that does make a difference.
So they don't see any expression of emotion from her.
Yeah. And they get it from you.
At least I'm teaching them that you know, your emotions are all right. You can have them.
Yep. Exactly. Because I shared with you, you know, from my first marriage, you know, I became very stoic and I stuffed my emotions so far down that I could hardly accept that I had any.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I did some work on them, and I did some work on them slowly. You know, I began to accept that I could have some emotions. And then my husband, you know, my now husband, boy, he taught me how to have lots of emotions. And that it was okay to be really angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Sometimes really angry with him. It was still okay. And he's really good at this emotion stuff, because I think I told you he's half Irish and half Italian. So culturally, he comes by it naturally.
Right.
So please, Merlin, remember that you're perfectly you.
All right. I like that. What behaviors or situations push my buttons?
Yeah.
I think, like, when I feel out of control, when I feel my ex, she's very bright and she's very articulate, and she can mow you down, you know, and so when I feel like I'm out of control, you know, and that I don't have any control over anything, you know, that really pushes my buttons when I feel like she has all the control. That's a big pusher of my buttons.
Does it? I mean, just based on everything else, I'm going to throw something out there, and you know, just let me know if it's off base or whatever. But do you feel less than her?
Probably. And I grew up feeling less than my brother. He's 11 months older than me and very bright. Yeah. So that's a button pusher, surely.
Well, all I want you to do is just keep relying on that. I'm perfectly me. I know it sounds trite, okay, but it's one of the things that I used for myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had such a concept of not being perfect, and yet I felt that's what was expected of me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally started using the language of I'm perfectly me, it started to take some of the pressure off once I started believing it, right? Because they're words at first, and then you have to go through a phase of really accepting yourself, and, you know, this is a great segue for what we're going to talk about tonight, but, you know, you have to go through accepting yourself and then believing that who you are as an individual is perfectly you. It doesn't mean that you're done growing or changing or thinking different thoughts or trying out different things. It just means that where you are right now, you're perfectly you.
Yeah, you are you.
Mm-hmm. Nobody else can be you. Just you.
No. Yeah. I like that.
Yay! I'm glad you like that. Toward the end of my first marriage, I was trying to figure out all kinds of things to do to help me just feel better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up with that affirmation was one of the things. And as we go into our discussion for tonight, you'll see it'll pop up naturally, and we can talk more about it then. So when someone treats you as less than them, that's definitely a behavior that pushes your buttons. What other behaviors push your buttons or situations?
Oh, with my children, when I'm trying to teach them something and they won't listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I feel like I have some wisdom and knowledge to give, and either with the kids or even with my ex, you know, and they don't listen. They just turn me off.
Hmm. So it's kind of a disrespect.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, I may be jumping to conclusions here, so tell me if I am.
No, you're not. I think that's one thing that is my button as well. For instance, mm-hmm. if I'm trying to teach my children one thing, and then my wife comes and says, "No, it doesn't work that way," you know, that sort of thing. You know. If she contradicts me or undermines my authority or that kind of thing, that really makes me mad, eh?
Yeah.
That could cause some swearing, but I usually ask her, you know, how would you feel if I did this to you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I did it to her a few times, and she didn't like it at all. Nah.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got into a few screaming matches because, not that I screamed, but obviously she did. But, you know, sometimes people don't like their own medicine. You know, they don't like the way, they don't like to be treated the way that they treat somebody else. So, I just did it on purpose one or two times just to show her this is what you're doing.
Yeah.
This is what you're doing, so just experience the same feelings as I have felt. But you didn't like that at all.
How about you, Verlaine? Did you ever have a chance to switch the tables with that belittling behavior?
No. No. And honestly, I don't know if she does it on purpose or if I just interpret it that way.
So it could be one of your adaptations, you think?
Could be. Yeah. It could be.
Well, that's interesting, because remember when we talked about the adaptations and, you know, there was a line that said family and a line that said, you know, your ex and how they were listed close together. A lot of times when people move out, right, they lose that boundary that the family created for them. And so they'll often replace that boundary with their spouse. So it sounds like one of the boundaries that you kind of gave up when, I don't know who moved out first, you or your brother, you replace with your ex.
Yeah, that's real possible. And letting her take that position that he has.
Yeah. Well, and if that is the case, then that means that now you're working on removing the need for that position at all. Which I think is a pretty good thing. As my cat turns around to bite me.
I don't have to have somebody that's smarter than me and faster talking than me and all that in my life. I don't have to be less than anybody.
Mm-mm. No, you don't have to be less than anybody.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm thinking that maybe with this breakup, you're ready to give that whole idea away and never have to deal with it again.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine said to me, why are you giving Beth all that power?
Yeah.
You know, why are you giving your ex all that power? You know, move on. Let it go.
What did you think of Hugo's story of the fish?
Yeah.
Did you feel Beth is a fish?
Do I feel what?
Did you feel like Beth was a fish?
Yeah, sometimes. Dragging me all over the lake.
Well, thank goodness it's only the lake and not the ocean.
Yeah. Did you say the ocean? Hugo, did you say the ocean?
Yeah, the ocean. The ocean. I'm an ocean guy. I'm not the lake. I like the ocean fish.
Do you live on the ocean?
Not really, but I like going, you know, for vacation, going to the ocean. I love the sound of water, and I like surfing and things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I love water, by the way, period. That's one thing. I just love water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, what do y'all think of this last question? There's an experience of feeling angry. Do you want to go there?
Sorry, what's the question?
Would you like to share a recent experience of feeling angry?
Yeah, tonight when I went over to pick up another daughter for another thing that she needed to go to, and of course his car was in the driveway again. You know,
mm-hmm.
this is the third night in a row that they've spent time together. You know, and I was really angry, and I she was in her room listening to music, and I couldn't get her to answer the door, and my ex and this man were gone in her car, and I was so angry, and I thought, I would love to just take my key out of my pocket and run it along the side of his car. Because he has a real shiny red car that he keeps very clean, you know. He's an ex-Marine. And it took everything in me not to pull my keys out of my car and just walk along his, my pants pocket, I mean, and just walk along his car and scratch the hell out of it.
I'm glad you resisted, but it's a good story.
So I can really identify with that picture where she was letting the air out of the tires.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, since you didn't key his car, how'd you get rid of the anger?
Oh, I just said to myself, you know, is it really worth it to put energy into being angry about how many times they've seen each other this week? I mean, who the hell cares, really?
Yeah.
You know, what makes the difference? You know? I just kind of try to talk some sense into my head, you know. Getting all ruffled about that isn't going to change a thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to let go and refocus, you know. I refocus myself on our opportunity, the opportunity tonight to be with you all, and you know. Not focus on what she or what they are doing. It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter, and it's okay to say F you and then say it doesn't really matter.
Right. Yes.
Because you still got the anger built up, right? And I don't want you to stuff it down. I don't want you to ignore it. I want you to go ahead and express it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then say, yep, and now I'm changing my thoughts.
Right. 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 I just feel, you know, when you feel a lot of resentment, you get angry.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really easy to be angry when you feel betrayed and resentful and dumped and less than.
I mean, I don't know, do you feel this? But I feel like if my ex had just divorced me and wasn't with somebody else, it wouldn't be as hard. But the fact that she's with somebody else just really is another level.
Yeah, look, one time I found out, look, my second son, he's a golfer, so he's playing provincial golf for our province. He's got provincial colors. So, he has to go, like I told you before, he has to go for all sorts of tournaments, things like that. So the one weekend, I found out that my wife, you know, she was to take him for a tournament. And then I found out, no, the boyfriend is with him.
Oh.
And I got so mad.
Mm-hmm.
I really got so mad. And obviously, I cussed and I was really mad, and then I took the Rottweiler for a walk, and when she came back the weekend, I told her, look, why don't you go moving with this guy, because, you know, if you're going to do this behind my back, you might as well move in with this guy, you know, because, you know, doing things like this, to me, doesn't make sense. And I don't know if she got offended by that or whatever, but anyway, it's things like that that makes me mad. If you're a hypocrite, if you I don't like, I hate hypocrites, because I like being who I am, and, you know, to express myself. But people who, you know, hide something, you know, why do they want to hide something? Why can't you just be honest about whatever? But I don't think I have an answer for you. The only thing I'm saying is that I see my wife with this guy, I get angry, and that's it. And it's probably going to take me a while to get over this. I have to forgive her. And like I said, I've made a decision to do that, but it's like a road that I started. I haven't, you know, completed it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I understand that, because it's the same thing for me, you know. I know.
Like this weekend, she's gone with him again. So, but I, at this stage, I'm not angry. I'm not even angry. I don't know why, but I've just sort of, I think I've accepted it at this stage. But, you know, she's going to be with him. So, and I hope, I don't know if she will be happy with him. I just hope she gets happiness somewhere in life, because she sure wasn't happy with me. So I just hope she gets happiness somewhere, because it didn't happen with me. So.
Verlaine, no, I talk to people in all different situations of getting divorced. And actually, I think that it might be harder to be dumped when you have absolutely no idea why. Right? At least when they tell you they want a divorce and they're seeing somebody else, you know it's because of somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. But if they're not seeing somebody else and they just want a divorce, you're left wondering what's going on. What aren't they telling me? You know, and then your mind just spins and spins and spins.
Mm. So at least, but, like in Hugo, in my cases, we know why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now your mind can spin and spin and spin with why did they do it, right? But at least you have kind of a concrete why is the, you know, the divorce, because there's somebody else. You'll never really know why anybody does anything that they do, right? Because you can't crawl into their head, and nobody can. I don't think anybody's articulate enough to be able to explain why they do the things that they do all the time. Because sometimes
yeah.
You just do them. And so,
they do it because they want to.
Yeah.
Because they want to do it. That's the thing. And if they want to do it, you're not going to stop them. That's it. And why they want to do it, that's a totally different question. But they do it because they want it.
Mm-hmm. In some way. Yeah, exactly. In some way. But, you know, the idea that you're bringing up, Verlaine, is something that's very common in thinking that if something else would had happened instead of this, it'd be easier than this, right? Mine was, and I think I shared this with you, if he had just died, it'd be easier than dealing with this divorce.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know? And I think that's one of our natural coping mechanisms, because it kind of gives us permission to feel like shit, because we know that what we're going through is really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say something too about what Hugo said about, you know, his wife not being honest about, you know, bringing the boyfriend along to the golf tournament. Beth has done that to me a number of times. Like one time she texted me and said, would I take the kids for the weekend because she was going to drive to Atlanta. She said, because I'm going to Atlanta to visit my parents. And, you know, she went with Paul to visit her parents.
Yeah.
And I said, why didn't you just say, Paul and I are going to Atlanta? Why? When she does something, she'll say that she's doing it, but I'll know she's doing it with him. And she denies it. She acts like he doesn't exist when she talks to me. And that makes me so angry. It's like, just say, Paul and I are going here. But she always consistently will just say I, like she's doing it by herself. That really angers me.
It's deliberate deception.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
It's deliberate deception.
And if she wants to do that, like I say, she wants to do that because she wants to.
I think because she feels guilty. I think it's the guilt thing.
I think it's the guilt thing for the dumper.
I think it's the guilt thing.
Yeah, the deception is because she feels guilty. But what she does with Paul is because she wants to do that.
Right. And she'll say she doesn't tell me because it's none of my business. And I'm like, well, what's the big deal? Just say what you're doing. You know?
Yes.
Why are you hiding this?
Well, I think it's very interesting that she's choosing to lie and that the girls look up to her as being perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a little bit of a discrepancy there for me.
If I would say she was lying or deceiving me, she would be angry, you know, like, you know, that I'm saying something that's not true. You know, that I'm disrespecting her by saying she's deceptive or that she's lying. She likes to tell me all the time that I'm disrespecting her.
Oh, my goodness.
She's told me that many times. You disrespect me, and Paul would never treat me that way.
So he finds his own buttons to push.
What'd you say?
I said until he finds his own buttons to push. Right, because that's what that is, right? That's a habituated thing, right? So those are buttons that you were pushing of each other, right? Because you felt disrespected, and she's claiming that you're doing to her, right, what she's doing to you.
Right.
So either there's projection going on, or you both had that button to be pushed. But yeah, it's so interesting, you know, when you're on this side of a relationship to be able to step away from it and look at it from a different perspective and have a little bit of learning that you can do from it. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I hurriedly asked you guys to kind of take a look at those last few slides and that section in the book. Because it describes a lot of different relationship types. And I don't know, did either of y'all have a chance to do that?
Which chapter was that?
Oh, I don't remember. It's like page 190 or something. Grab mine. It's towards the end of the book. I want to say it's like 13, but...
I don't remember that, Karen.
Oh, I just said it very quickly at the end.
Oh, styles of relationship, a body structure exercise?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't read that.
Well, and then it was in the very last slide from last week, you know, the part that we didn't get to go over.
Uh-huh. Oh, I missed that.
But this, okay, this may be an interesting piece for y'all to review this week in addition to the rest of the homework.
Okay.
Because it often brings up a little bit more anger, as you start to recognize, oh, that's what my relationship was like.
Okay, so the chapter on trust.
What chapter is that, Karen?
It's just a few pages. It's like page 190 through 193 or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So this is going to be like a bit of homework for this week, then. 190.
Yeah, just go ahead. Yeah, and take a look at them since I didn't have it written down on the homework sheet. But we just didn't get to it last week, and it's usually a really good one to start recognizing. We had a bit of this going on and a bit of that going on, and it's just another layer of awareness. And you know, like Hugo, you had a layer of awareness peel off this week with the whole thing of this is my contribution to what went on. The body structure ideas of relationships will often allow another layer to come off.
Okay.
Get more awareness.
Yeah. You know, one thing I also realized, Karen, is that when my wife being like dominant and how can I say, she expressed her anger in a very aggressive way, and me being, obviously in the situation, maybe I have sometimes allowed her to get the upper hand. On the inside of me, you feel subconsciously. What I realized is that you sort of make the decision right next time when you do this to me, that sort of thing. So in a subconscious way, you react. And in a way that doesn't promote a good relationship, which I only realized now, is that thing that happens there, that anger that you feel there, that's not expressed and whatever, it comes back at a later time, and it doesn't promote a good relationship. Okay. It's just something else I realized, but okay.
Yeah. I call that, remember, I think we talked about the rug that you sweep under, everything underneath? That's an example of it, right there, what you just said, with, letting her have the upper hand and just kind of not dealing with it all right then. You chose not to deal with it, right? You chose not to do anything differently than what you were doing, right? Because you didn't want things to get worse. But that was sweeping it under the rug.
Yes. Okay.
But those are big realizations.
Yeah, but it's good.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, a lot of the realizations that you have with going through a course like this. I mean, I had them too, so it's the generic you, right? Aren't necessarily comfortable realizations, because a lot of times they're a great big mirror in our face reflecting something that we didn't know was there. But the beauty of it is that it gives us an opportunity to choose differently. And choice is where all the power of life comes from. Right?
Yeah.
So if you feel trapped, if you feel out of control, right, that's powerless because you don't feel like you have any choice.
Yeah.
But once you realize that you do have choice, right, it may not be between options that you really like, right, but once you embrace that you do have choice, you become a whole lot more powerful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's true.
Verlan, you did that this week, right? With choosing how you were going to respond to seeing his car in the driveway yet again.
Mm-hmm.
Although an F-bomb in there would have made it, you know. Are you guys okay with that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we're going to talk tonight about self-esteem. And I don't really know of anybody except for a narcissist who wouldn't like to have a little bit better self-esteem. And especially when divorce happens and you're on the receiving end of that information, your self-esteem usually goes in the toilet. At least mine did. Even though
yeah.
I knew I wanted the divorce, he still decided it, but I still felt worthless.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's the way it makes you feel.
So, I think it's also very interesting that in our the course of our discussion about anger, you both pointed out that during the marriages, there were things that undermined your ability to have a good, healthy sense of self-esteem. So it's been kind of this downward slope and just, you know, the divorce may have been a cliff, but it was already on a downward trend. Does that make sense to y'all?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the next question then, of course, becomes why would you want to have a healthy self-esteem? What do you guys think?
Are you asking us a question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Why would you want to have a healthy self-esteem? What are the benefits of it?
Well, to give a short answer, I think it can only benefit me, you know, if I have a healthy self-esteem. I just thought a little bit, but I can only see benefits. I can't see anything bad about that. And going forward,
one of the benefits
to recover. You know, to get to have faster recovery. That's what I would think.
Yep, I would agree with that. And Verlan, it seemed like your thought process kicked in the same time that Hugo's did. because I heard you trying to say something too. What is a benefit that you thought of for
I mean, to experience yourself as an equal to others rather than as less than.
Oh, that just really resonated with you, girl, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that. Okay. You guys came up with two of the, how many do I have here? Five that I have. So you actually came up with the first two that I had. So well done. Well done.
High five, Hugo.
High five.
So I think it can also make you happier.
Yeah.
It can give you more respect for yourself and for others.
Yes.
And then I also have down here that you're more motivated to achieve goals.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're feeling as low as a slug in the mud, which is where I was when I got divorced, it's really hard to do anything that's of importance to you.
Yes.
So, healthy self-esteem is really important. But sometimes if somebody tells you, well, just feel better about yourself. It could be really frustrating. Because you say, well, F you. If I knew how to do that, I'd do it already, okay? So shut the F up. See? I can use it as entertainingly as my husband can. So, I'm not going to do that to y'all. I'm going to give y'all some ideas for how you can improve your self-esteem.
Okay.
And the first one comes directly out of the book. And it says to make a decision. And, you know, when somebody first says, yeah, you make a decision to have self-esteem, the first thing you might say is, F you. You know, because if it was that easy, really.
Yeah.
But
with that easy, we'd all have great self-esteem, huh?
Yeah. But there is a nugget here that I want to pull out of this, okay? Sometimes by not choosing, you're choosing the opposite or the status quo.
Yeah, it's still a choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just
so.
So it.
It's like putting your attention on something, right, by making a decision.
Yeah.
So if you make a decision to have a better self-esteem, then you're more likely to do these other things. See how this works?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds hokey. Right? But there is a nugget here. So sometimes you have to dig down to the nugget instead of just going, oh, so stupid. Because that's my tendency sometimes. And I know the first time I read this, you know, when I was going through the workshop with my divorce, I was just like, that's got to be the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Because it made me think, just like, you know, because I was a stressed out person. Oh my gosh, I was so stressed out. And people would tell me, just relax, just relax. And I just want to slap every single one of them. You know, it's like, if I knew how to do better than I'm doing right now, don't you think I'd do it?
Yeah.
So.
I can just think what your husband would have said if somebody told him that. But anyway.
Yeah. I've made the mistake over the years a few times to tell my husband to just chill or just relax when he's really upset. Yeah.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
No, I have to come at it completely differently. Oh, I love him so much, and boy, he's taught me so much. Okay. So, the next idea for improving self-esteem, you guys are going to say F you again, but I'm still going to bring it out for you to dig down to the nugget. Okay? So, it's to diminish self-judgment. Okay. And I know we all have the itty-bitty shitty committee in our heads that yaks away at us, right? And says, like, you should have blah, 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 why'd you blah, 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 you know, and just really hammers away hard at times. And so
itty-bitty
it's usually,
shitty.
Yeah. And so it's, most of the time they're so constant in our heads that we don't even realize that it's happening. So, in order to diminish them, first you have to become aware of them, right? And so, I've got three different ways that you can become aware of the self-judgment. The first one is to snap a rubber band on your wrist. And if you look at the picture,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can see that guy was actually snapping the rubber band on his wrist, because look at all those red marks.
Yeah, he was really going for it.
He really was. And this works for some people. It really does. I had a woman one time whose husband was physically abusive, was taking this class. And she just kept feeling the pull to go back to him, and feeling the pull to go back to him. And so she tried this. And her wrist was so sore that she had to switch to the other wrist after a while, but it worked for her. It helped her to have the strength to know that she didn't have to listen to those voices that were telling her that she should just go back. The next way to become more aware is to actually write down those judgments when they happen, and then right next to that negative, write the positive piece of it, right? So, Verlaine, I'm going to use you an example. Are you okay with that?
Sure.
Okay, because we kind of already talked about it a little bit. So, you know, when your mind starts going down that road of listening to your daughter say that mommy's perfect, and you're not because you're crying, right?
Right.
The positive behind that is, I'm perfectly me, and I'm teaching you girls about expressing emotions.
Yeah.
Does that resonate?
Yeah.
The next one is what I had to do. And that's putting some distance between so that they weren't controlling my thoughts, that I could actually see them, see that itty-bitty shitty committee and all those nasty things as being separate from me. So I don't know if y'all watched cartoons when you were little, but I sure did. And I loved Foghorn Leghorn. I just thought he was hilarious. Well, I love Bugs Bunny, too. But I wound up thinking of my itty-bitty shitty committee as being the chicken hawk. Do y'all remember the chicken hawk? The little guy in the picture here?
Mm-hmm.
And he was always bossy. He always knew what was right. And Foghorn Leghorn would just kind of look at him and tell him things like, "Not now, kid, you're bothering me." And so I would look at the two of them having a conversation. You know, I'd imagine that in my head happening anytime that, you know, it got really bad. And then I was far enough away that I could laugh at it. Right? And say, "Oh, that's not me."
Mm-hmm.
so I could become aware of them and then choose differently. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
Okay. And this is, actually, I got this picture off the internet. I don't have a signed, you know, slide of this, but I did print it off, and I have it framed on my bookshelf to help me.
Oh, it's a good idea.
I'm sorry?
Good idea. It's a good idea.
Well, thank you. Now, some people are able to keep it closer in than that, but I needed to have the extra separation. I know one woman who, she went to Catholic school, and there was one nun that was just really mean. I think she was only like second or third grade. She had this nun, and this nun was very jowly. And when she spoke, her jowls kind of wiggled. And so she would imagine this nun's jowls be like, you know, hanging down to her shoulders, right? And any time the nastiness started, you know, we would be this nun speaking, and then the jowls would just be wiggling all over the place, and it'd make her laugh. So that's how she learned how to separate it. Okay, the next idea is to create more loving relationships. And I know, this is another one. It's like, come on, Karen. But there's nuggets here. So, most of us are coming out of relationships when we get divorced that were not especially loving, at least not in all the right ways. Right?
Yeah.
And that could be very detrimental to your self-esteem, as we already talked about. So the reality is that it's usually not only the marriage that's not exactly the best kind of relationship. And so you may need to tweak some other relationships in your life. And some of the ways you can create more loving relationships are learning to fight fair, establishing and respecting boundaries, making a mutual decision to have a more loving relationship, right? So it's that conscious thing and that whole decision thing at the very beginning, and doing things together that you both enjoy. So the question that everybody almost always asks is, yeah, and what if you can't make it better? Well, if you can't make it better, you're really left with two choices. The first one is to end the relationship as it currently is, or increase your self-esteem so the relationship isn't destructive to either one of you anymore. And I know I'm going through this really fast, it's already almost time. But, do you guys have any questions about that?
No.
Okay. It's one of these things, you know, that we could spend an entire night talking about, and then some. But, yeah, the idea is there. Okay, now here's the one that I was talking about earlier, was giving yourself affirmations and affirmations. An affirmation is, you know, saying something like, I'm perfectly me, right? And then the affirmation for that would be, how am I perfectly me?
And you would answer
so,
that question.
Yeah, and then you answer that question. And it reinforces the affirmation.
Okay.
So it creates this nice little loop, right, of building your self-esteem. So, another thing you can do to give yourself affirmations and affirmations is to write a list of 10 things that you like about yourself. And then change each affirmation to an affirmation, and then answer those questions.
So an affirmation always begins with how, or...
Uh-huh. How is this true?
Okay.
Yeah. So how is what I just said true?
So you just substantiate the affirmation. That's what you say.
Yes. So if I were to do it, right, and I say, I'm perfectly me. Well, how am I perfectly me? Well, I'm loud. I'm silly. Right? And just, you know, the things that I know make me me and quirky.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or the things that I believe are my gifts.
Yeah. So, for our homework is to write 10 affirmations and then 10 affirmations that go along with them.
Well, that would be getting it to the A-plus level. I didn't even give you that hard a homework.
Oh.
But you can do that. I think, actually, that would be a fabulous thing to do.
Oh, that's fine. Let's do it.
Good. Overachievers. I love it. The next thing you can do is accept and believe compliments. Do either one of you have a problem with receiving a compliment or believing it?
No, I actually like compliments.
Except if they're not,
you know, you sometimes get people that want to, they want to get something out of you.
Yeah.
And flattery. We call it flattery, no? That's the English word. It's flattery?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I dislike flattery in a bad way. No.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to manipulate you.
Yes. You feel like you're being manipulated. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And how about you, Verlan? Do you accept compliments easily?
Usually.
I had to learn how to do that. They would feel very uncomfortable to me for a long time.
No.
Cool. All right. The next one is to nurture yourself daily. Because, you know, you take care of things that are important to you. Well, you should be important to yourself. So you need to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And so, when we look at this list of six things, which of these seem the most appealing to you?
I think give the affirmations and affirmations and nurture myself daily.
Yeah, those are great ones. How about you, Hugo?
I think the first thing is to make the decision. I agree with Elaine. I like the affirmations. But I think it's at the core to make the decision because that's where it starts, where it all starts. And if you don't make that decision, you know, I don't know if the rest is going to happen that much or continuously. So I think the decision is very important. Even write it down somewhere or whatever. And like you say, that picture of the chicken hawk and whatever, that actually showed you that you made the decision.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You hear what I'm saying?
So it's a cue for me.
Yeah, it reminded you every time that you look at that thing that, you know, you make decision to do this. I think that's very important. But yes, I like the affirmation. That's going to, for sure. And the other thing is create more loving relationships. I think that's also very important. I mean, I mean, all of us are in all sorts of relationships, and
mm-hmm.
by doing this, you can only improve that. And I, yeah.
Well, then, which of these seem least appealing to y'all?
Least appealing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just not as important in improving self-esteem.
Well, just for you personally, because
yeah.
you, I don't want to do that.
Well, I don't know. I kind of think they're all good. I don't have a sense of one of them not being appealing.
Oh, good.
No, I also think that, but I think the one that's maybe, if I can say, or at least important at this stage is the self-judgment. I don't think that's probably not my biggest problem, but I think at this stage I need to be more self-aware, that type of thing. Because I think I need to know, like I said before, the mistakes that I made. I need to make sure that I cover them. You know that I had a share in breaking down the relationship or whatever. I need to know about that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I need to be self-aware, and I think, but in that manner, I think one can also swing it positively. Is that when you identify those things, I think you need to give yourself a pat on the back. Because you wouldn't have known about this otherwise, and you would have gone on in the same fashion, you know, indefinitely, or until you realize that, you know, you are making a mistake, or you could have handled the situation better, or whatever. So,
well, I think there's a distinction
yeah.
here, though, between
yeah.
what you're talking about is self-awareness, and
yeah.
self-judgment are the constant nagging, beating yourself up, putting yourself down.
Yeah. Yeah. I think at this stage, maybe that is not my biggest problem on in this. I'm not, again.
Yeah. I don't, yes, I agree. I don't constantly beat myself up. I don't think. Maybe I
yeah,
did. No. You kind of pointed out that I did.
Well, I think it's in some ways, you know, because for me, I wasn't necessarily aware of it. I just knew that I judged myself harshly, right, is how I, and I wouldn't even use harshly. I think I was just, let me think back to that time for a minute. I was just trying to motivate myself to be better. And so if I constantly pointed out what was wrong, then I could change it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And that's how I interpreted it. And the result of that, constantly pointing out what I was wrong about and what I could have done better, was that I never gave myself credit for anything else. And so it was always negative.
Oh.
Right? Very rare to think positively of what I'd done. Very
uh-huh.
rare. I would think positively when someone would tell me, most of the time, unless it was too uncomfortable and I didn't believe them. Okay. So when I worked with a therapist and she started to point out some of this, right? And then I worked with a coach and she pointed out more of it. And so I was finally able to move past that harshness with myself. It doesn't mean that I don't examine my behavior now, but I don't use it as a point of beating myself up anymore. And that's what the self-judgments are that I'm trying to bring about awareness of.
Okay.
That makes sense now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you're not beating yourself up for things that you could have done better.
Yeah.
I think what I try to say is that when you realize you did something wrong, I think it's something to be. It's not to beat yourself. It's something to be excited about because you can. You have a way now to do it better. You've seen a better way. You know. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's actually it's a revelation, you know, because you can look at things in two ways. You can look at you can cry over the spilled milk, but you can also rejoice over, you know, knowing not how to do it in the future, how to prevent it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's
and
like
that's very much a self-awareness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I also have some resources that I like for improving self-esteem. And let me see. I'd like to read you a few poems. And just so you can kind of hear them. The first one is a twist on the serenity prayer. Grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know it's me.
Oh, wow.
And this one is by Marianne Williamson called Our Deepest Fear. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we're liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
Yeah. That's a beautiful one.
Yeah. This next one is called Rules for Being Human, and the author has given me credit for it. You will receive a body. You may like it or hate it, but it will be yours for your entire lifetime. You will learn lessons. You are enrolled in a full-time informal school called life. Each day in this school, you will have the opportunity to learn lessons. You may like the lessons or think them irrelevant and stupid. There are no mistakes, only lessons. Growth is a process of trial, error, and experimentation. The failed experiments are as much a part of the process as the experiment that ultimately succeeds. A lesson is repeated until learned. A lesson will be presented to you in various forms until you have learned it. When you have learned it, you can go on to the next lesson. Learning lessons does not end. There is no part of life that does not contain lessons. If you are alive, there are lessons to be learned. There is no better than here. When your there has become a here, you will simply obtain another there that will, again, look better than here. Others are merely mirrors of you. You cannot love or hate something about another person unless it reflects to you something you love or hate about yourself. What you make of life is up to you. You have all the tools and resources you need. What to do with them is up to you. The choice is yours. The answers lie inside you. The answers to life's questions lie inside you. All you need to do is look, listen, and trust.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. There are three books here that I listed for improving self-esteem. The first is As a Man Thinketh, kind of an old book, you can tell by the title. The Little Engine That Could. Do y'all remember that book from when you
sure
were
did.
Kids or reading it to your kids?
Yeah.
Think I can.
Right.
And then The Motivation Manifesto is a book from, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, by Brendan Burchard. And I think it's a fabulous book. It's one that I refer to often. You can also improve your self-esteem by hanging out with people who love you, animals who love you, or just hanging out in nature. Have you ever noticed how good you feel when you're just hanging outside for a while, listening to the birds, swatting away the mosquitoes?
Nature is it's beautiful.
It's very healing.
Yeah.
There's also music.
Yeah.
It can be incredibly uplifting and empowering.
Yes.
What about movies? Do y'all have any movies that you can think of that you just felt really empowered after watching?
I'm not a big movie fan.
Yeah. Forrest Gump, yeah, Life is a Box of Chocolates. Yep.
Yeah.
We saw the movie The Martian, and I thought that that was a pretty good one, although I have to admit I like the book better than the movie. That was really affirming in the goodness of humankind. Do you have any magazines that you enjoy reading as a way of improving self-esteem or feeling good about yourself?
Yes, I have an outdoor magazine. We have what we call it. It's like camping and outdoor magazine.
Uh-huh.
I like going into the bundus, the wild places where you haven't seen, you have the fewest human beings ever on the planet. I like places like that. And it comes back to the nature thing.
Yeah, it does very strongly.
Yeah.
How about you, Verlaine? Do you have a magazine?
No, not really. I mean, I read a news magazine, but that doesn't necessarily make me feel positive about myself.
No, news magazines don't really. How about, do you have an activity that you like to do that makes you feel good about yourself?
I started a collection of things that I, I've never had a collection, and I'm collecting small vases that are made of colored glass. And I go to, anytime I pass a Goodwill store or a Salvation Army store, I'll just go in. I won't look for anything else. I'm just looking for little vases made of colored glass. And I found some of the most beautiful ones, and I have them in my windows.
Oh, nice.
And it makes me feel good just to do that fun activity for myself, you know, and with myself. I do it with myself just for fun. Kind of my own little game.
It's like a hide and seek.
Yeah, right.
Verlaine, have you always done that? I mean, has this always been like one of your...
No. It just started about a month ago.
Is that? Okay.
No, I've never had a collection of anything like that. And I'm just starting it. And already I have, 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 little vases. They're beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. And they cost anywhere from $1 to $2, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice hobby to have, nice.
Yeah. And the fun side, the under windows, and, you know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, the other thing I'm also into is, not really, as well as you can call it activity, I like gardening, so so what I do is my wife had her ideas what should happen in the garden, and it was a disaster because nothing worked, because some of the things should have been planted in shade and some of them had full sun, so she mixed them all up, you know. We had the fern or a cycad was supposed to be in full sun and was just suffering here in the shade. So things like that. So I'm busy making a lot of cuttings and things like that. So I'm small little nursery going here.
I'm
this whole freaking garden planted all over, you know, planted over again. So once she's moved out, I'm going to cut off some of the trees I don't like, and you know, plant new ones. That kind of thing. But yes, I wanted to do this all along, but obviously I didn't have the time, and obviously there were lots of arguments about these things. Never mind. Never mind, I'm going to change all that. Yeah.
Good for you. Well, let's review the homework real quick. Reach out to each other. Continue your journaling if you're doing that. Make a list of 10 things that you like about yourself. So that would be the affirmations part. And bring it with you to our next class.
Okay.
And then chapter 11, as well as pages 190 through 193.
Okay.
So, next up is our serenity prayer and moment of gratitude. Which order would y'all like to do these?
Let's do it the way you have it there, Karen. No problem.
Okay. Oops. My little mouse went crazy on me because I spun it around. All right. So for the serenity prayer, God, grant me the
serenity
to accept the things that I cannot
change.
The courage to change the things I can.
and
the
wisdom
to know the difference. And then I still laugh every time I think of the other version of it.
can we ask that perhaps?
Yeah. Do you want all of the poems or just that one?
I'd like all of them.
I like all of them too.
Okay, let me add poems to the list. Oh, sorry, Suki boy, you gotta get off and let Mama write on this. And poems. Okay. He likes to sit on my notebook with my cat. He's my big cat. He's the one that came up and was biting me earlier. So. I'm sorry?
No, you also have a cat there. I have another one all over while I'm talking.
Well, he's not usually the one that's all over me. The other one is, but I guess they're doing tag team tonight. Oh, she's sleeping. She's sleeping in the chair. Yeah. So, yes, I have my menagerie around here. I want to start off the moment of gratitude, if y'all are okay with that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I am thankful for, of course, all my furry beasts for keeping me company tonight and entertaining you every once in a while with their calling out. And I'm also especially thankful for all the progress that you each made this week. I really think that you've made some tremendous strides. You know, Verlan, with the choices that you're making, you know, that are so positive for you. You know, you're seeing that you do have choices and that there's no reason to remain trapped in the grief. And I just love that so much. It brings a great big smile to my face to think about that. And Hugo, I am really thrilled with the self-discovery that you're doing and saying, oh, if I look at this material that I'm reading in this way, I can see what my part was in having this marriage fall apart. And I can also see how I can help my sons not fall into the same trap.
Yeah.
And so y'all have done tremendous work this week. I really, really hope you appreciate yourselves for all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very grateful for what I found out this week about myself. Like you said, Karen, that's what I'm very grateful for, is for what I found out, you know, experiencing or finding a better way of doing things and realizing where I made the mistakes. To me, it's like, how can I say, it's like revelation to me, and I like these things. I like that. Obviously, you feel a pang of, I feel a pang of regret of what I've done wrong, but at the same time, I also feel like, dang, how I should have done it, you know? All the time the answer was there, but I didn't see it. Now I see. You know, now I can see this is the right thing, the way to do it. And yes, I think this week, what I'm very grateful for is the hello letter. I think after that, I felt that, you know, there are so many things that, you know, I can still be grateful for, and that's worth loving for, and you know, getting up on a daily basis and be excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for Lan for all your perspectives also this week or this session. It's also enlightening to see things through your eyes as well. I really enjoy your perspective.
Thank
thanks
you.
For that. And Yeah, thanks, Karen, for guiding us in this manner. I really appreciate that. Okay. I can feel I'm moving along, and to me that's good. I'm looking forward to the weekly session and, you know, learning more and reading the book and so on. It's moving me along and in the right direction. Thanks for that.
Oh, I'm so glad that your hard work's paying off.
Yeah, it does.
I ditto everything you guys have said. I also feel grateful that the material and the discussion in the book, all of it is making me feel like I'm okay, that I'm on the right track, that, you know, everything I feel and everything I've done and been through is normal and
legitimate.
I'm okay right where I am.
I love that word that Hugo threw out, legitimate, right?
Yeah.
Because it is. I mean, when you're going through divorce and everybody around you is saying stuff that makes you question what you're feeling, that's horrible.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you're finding comfort in the text.
Yeah. Really am.
Yay! You guys are doing so good. So good. Thank you so much for being here tonight again.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Verlaine.
Thank you, Hugo. Thanks, Karen.
You're welcome. All right, y'all. I can hear the sleepiness creeping into Verlaine's voice.
Oh, it really is. Oh, goodness. You know, I go to bed at 8:30.
I know, and I'm looking at the time. I'm like, oh. So, sweet dreams of Verlaine. Hugo,
thank you.
Go have a fabulous Friday.
Thank you. Thank you, I will.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
All right. I'll talk to y'all next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.